Check it, check, check. Are we going? Just start recording. This is Rich. This is why I can't go on the internet, because I discover things. So, we just finished recording episode 281, the White Men Are Still Racist episode. And I had jumped on the internet because I wanted to do some... I wanted to Google something because I wanted about filmmaking. Anyhow, while I was there, it occurred to me, I was like, I wonder if patriarchy.com is available. So I Googled for patriarchy.com. There's some domain squatter sitting on it, which pisses me off. Patriarchy.com would be fantastic to have. But then, right in the Google results, right under that, I discovered this. You can scream and shout with all your might. And you're going to scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, and moan. You are going to be looking for a safe space. You can shove your opinion up your ass. That way Obama's cock has something to keep it company. I wasn't going to be talking. I had other stuff lined up for this episode, and yeah, I've got to read this from this website. This is too funny. Greetings, by the way. I am Greg Miller himself. I'm the founder of Cynical Libertarian Society. This is Stating the Obvious podcast. I've been podcasting for 11 fucking years. I'm always right. I've never been wrong. This is the weapons platform from which I launched the cruise missile on the intellect and hopes in on and destroys stupid motherfucking states all around the world. Stupidity-seeking warhead. It's a nuclear warhead, stupidity-seeking guidance system. Homes right in on the nearest fucking statist, right-wing statist, left-wing statist, feminist statist, environmentalist statist, tranny statist, homosexual statist, does not matter what kind of statist you are. If you're a fucking statist, the status-seeking missile will find you and kill you. If you're a cute girl, I'll come on your face before blowing you up with a nuclear warhead. Blow up inside you. All right, anyway. I am the great one himself, blah, blah, blah. In the control room over there is still the lovely and adorable Randy. I've been calling you the lovely and adorable Randy pretty much the entire time, haven't I? One of these days I should come up with something new for you, but it doesn't matter. You're just stand there and look cute. Email, ooh, almost spilled hot tea all over the keyboard. That would have been great. I'm drinking green tea now. Coffee is over with. God, cynlibsoc.com, that's dog spelled backwards, G-O-D, at cynlibsoc.com is where you send your hate mail and pictures of you naked if you're a good-looking woman. All right, so I found this, the blog iblamethepatriarchy.com. This is, yeah, oh, what is this? Oh, my God. Oh man, all right, this looks pretty funny. This has not been updated since February 10th, 2015. That's kind of sad. All right, I'm going to read this. I started reading this. This is hilarious. This was posted on January 29th, 2015. Just read a piece in the Huffington Post written by a self-identified feminist who endeavors to explain feminism to a purported audience of feminists who don't want feminists to explain feminism to them. Author Kat George's article is titled, Six Things That Definitely Don't Make You a Bad Feminist. Like everything published on the internet these days, it is a list. And it is. Everything on the internet is a fucking list, because that's what Google is looking for. And all of you idiots out there write your content to appease Google, because of course you hate the corporations. But anytime you can be obedient to what Google wants, you know, anytime you can be obedient to the way Google wants you to present your thoughts on the internet, you're going to be goddamn sure you do it. The gist of her list is that performance of femininity does not conflict with feminist activism. It includes permission for feminist to permission. It includes permission for feminists to change their name when they get married, to get waxed, and to let dudes pick up the tab. Also on the list, it's no skin off George's nose if you like to watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians. but just so you know, she'll think you're an idiot if you do. Not a bad feminist, but an idiot. She also opines that, quote, you don't have to be a hairy, unwashed vegan to promote feminist belief, unquote. Good to know that even non-cliched, non-stereotypes can take up the mantle. Regarding the Kardashians et al., it is the duty of the spinster aunt to note that passive mainstream TV consumption is so politically neutral that it can barely be construed as an act. Watching TV is a bodily function regulated by the atomic nervous system, like digestion or sucking down another pitcher of Margs, but I digress. Quote, one thing that really irks me about feminism, complains George in an effort to tell other feminists how to do feminism correctly, quote, is that sometimes feminists try to tell other feminists how to do feminism correctly. How dare you try to tell me how to be a woman? Now let me explain to you what a real man is. Oh my God. Oh, all right. Well, of course she's irked. That's because she isn't doing feminism correctly. Someone who, without compunction, suggests that vegans with body hair practice questionable hygiene is probably on the receiving end of stern feminism lectures more or less constantly. Anyone would find that irksome. But see here, if feminists who do understand feminism keep their traps shut when feminists who don't understand feminism go around explaining feminism wrong, everybody loses. Good thing I'm on the case. For the public good, it will be necessary to tweak Ms. George's definition of feminism just a smidge. Rather than a lifestyle accessory in the shape of some passive, nebulous, and capriciously applied belief in gender equality, feminism is in fact a political movement, the goal of which is the liberation of women from patriarchal oppression. It's not just Miss George either. So many of these ladies are flitting about the countryside with the idea that feminism is about believing in equality. Often they embellish the concept with vague notions of empowerment and the pseudo-feminist mandate to choose choices. Yes, of course, because remember, you can do anything you want. You go, girl. You can choose your choices. But, oh wait, you can't get a job, you can't make as much money as a man, you can't avoid getting raped, you can't use logic, you can't do math. And math doesn't actually have any choices. I mean, there's no choices in math. Like 2 plus 2, it's 4. There aren't any choices. It's not like multiple choice. Is it 2? Is it 4? Is it 6? No, 2 plus 2 is 4. There are no choices, and yet you still can't do math. Suggest George, when you've got feminism on board, quote, you can be whoever you want to be, unquote. Particularly, it seems, when who you want to be is a woman who performs femininity, a set of behaviors specifically engineered to ensure the dehumanization and subjugation of half the global population. Now that identifying as a feminist is a trendy fab of selexi celebs, choice feminism, the bane of all 7 rad femmes the world over, has never been hotter. Where on earth did this idea come from? The idea that feminism is a belief that one can process through fashion and TV preferences into some sort of persona. Well, from patriarchal forces of misogynistic hegemony, that's where. What we have here is a failure on the part of feminism to penetrate the monster force field that protects the dominant culture from incursions of reason and justice. I'm reading this cold. I only read the first couple of paragraphs and I was laughing so hard I just told Landy to start recording because I wanted to read this on the cast. Patriarchy and is so insidious and invisible and impenetrable that feminism has failed, despite its best efforts, to sufficiently disseminate amongst the oppressed the actual gist of actual feminist ideology. And I can agree with that. Speaking as part of the patriarchy, those of us in the patriarchy, we actually have a cell phone app that whenever a feminist attempts to penetrate the patriarchy with the truth of feminism, we get an alert on our cell phones, and we immediately go to where she is, and we oppress her. We use our psychic powers and our cultural influence, and we cause her to be oppressed, while, of course, all the time she is go-girling and is able to do anything she wants to do because she can choose choices. The choose choices, that is the fucking most brilliant thing. That is hilarious. The vague notions of empowerment and the pseudo-feminist mandate to choose choices. That's brilliant. The pseudo-feminist mandate to choose choices. It's like hope and change. It's this phrase. We want choice. What the fuck does that mean? We want choices. Well, let's see, you have 19 fucking forms of birth control. Men have 3. We want choice. Well, let's see, you can get food stamps, or welfare, or social security, or WIC, or alimony, or child support, or all of the above. Men can get pretty much none of those. Maybe food stamps if you're poor enough. But you just don't have enough choices. Oh my gosh. You know, you can choose to have a job and neglect it, or you can choose to have a child and neglect it, or you can choose to have a job and a child and neglect both of them. Men have jobs, they have to show up and actually do stuff. And if they have children, if they neglect the child, they have to make child support payments. Gosh, you poor fucking feminist cunts. You just don't have enough fucking choices to choose from, do you? God, the fucking oppression. You're so fucking oppressed. The result is that the mega-rich, hyper-sexualized entertainers can position themselves as feminist role models and swiftly neutralize the revolution by empowering the masses to view hyper-sexualization as a rewarding philosophical pursuit. Sadly, making the simple assertion that, quote, you can be whoever you want to be, unquote, in no way alters the reality that you cannot even remotely be whomever you want to be. Because, as the kids today say, patriarchy. All women are obligated by social pressure, the state, religion, pop culture, and whatnot to practice femininity. It's not a choice, at least not one that can be made freely and without consequence. Often it is a matter of survival. Women who acquiesce, who embrace the strictures imposed by femininity, are rewarded. Those who decline or cannot comply are punished. No person whose fundamental agency has been stripped can choose choices. Women cannot choose choices. And again, yeah, your entire argument as a feminist cunt is that women have no agency. I've only been saying this on this podcast for how long? The entire thrust, get it? The entire thrust of the feminist argument is that women have no agency. Women cannot control how much money they make. They cannot control whether or not they get raped. They cannot control what kind of clothes they wear. They cannot control their gender identity. They cannot control anything. Everything that happens to a woman is forced upon her by the patriarchy. They have no fucking agency. This is exactly the whole point of what I talked about in the previous podcast when I'm adding to CLSology. The you go girl, you can do anything you want to do except for all these things. Women sit here and they pretend they have agency. They pretend they have they can choose choices. Yet their entire, again, not women, let me use my terms correctly, femistatist, pretend that they can choose choices and they're a you-go-girl and they can do anything, and yet at the same time they constantly assert they have no agency. Alright, anyway, this is pretty fucking hilarious. I just stumbled across that and there it was. And, oh my god, Amy Schumer, oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god. You started to go down on me. That's ambitious. Yeah, your pussy must really stink if going down on you is ambitious. All right, anyway, I will not be reading this blog on the air. I should fucking do that on my own time. All right. Everybody hold on because I'm going to move the microphone. Hey, look. You see how good I am, Randy? I did that with a minimum amount of banging. Whew. All right, speaking of banging, let's talk about girls. Oh, I'm such a sexist pig. All right, let me get to the big chunk shit. Let me get to what I want to get to. The important thing here. I want to talk about the book. How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, the Past, Present, and Future of a Multi-Billion Dollar Franchise by Chris Taylor. Again, read the book. If you have any interest in Star Wars, it's pretty damn cool. It's a lot of insight. It dispels a lot of myths. For example, Harrison Ford in Empire Strikes Back, where Carrie Fisher says, "I love you," and Harrison Ford says, "I know." It has been widely advertised, or widely, whatever, mythologicalized. Is that a word? Here it is now. It's been mythologicalized on the internet that he made that up on the spot. He actually didn't. It turns out Harrison Ford and the director, prior to shooting that scene, were sitting around brainstorming numerous responses that Harrison Ford could say at that time, and "I know" was merely one of the potential responses, and apparently only one of the potential responses that was filmed. It's just the one they decided on going with. So this book will dispel many of the Star Wars myths that you may have heard about. Anyway, there's a couple of things in here I want to hit. I'm going to do the two really short ones first, then we're going to do the long one. And I mean, also, it's a good look at George Lucas, because what I like about this book is that it presents George Lucas as neither God nor devil. It presents him as, you know, a normal human being with strengths and with flaws, and it shows you a lot about his creative process and his struggles. Again, you know, because men, as men, we struggle with things. We struggle to achieve, as opposed to women who just watch Netflix and eat food. I'm a foodie, and I like watching Netflix, and yeah, I'm like, I'm a foodie, and like, I eat food, and I watch Netflix, and I watch Netflix, and I eat food, and the patriarchy, I can't get a raise at work because the patriarchy is holding me down, and because when I'm at work, I'm usually thinking about what I'm gonna watch on Netflix that night and what I'm gonna eat, and then when I go home, like, I know some of the men I work with, like, when they go home, they do online classes, or like, they're educating themselves, or there's this one guy, he's teaching himself computer programming, and like, when I go home at night, I watch Netflix, and I eat food because I'm a foodie, and I should make as much money as the men do, because like, oh my god, like, patriarchy, like, I'm watching Netflix. So anyhow, right, women, that's women. You know, in this book, we see that George Lucas went through a lot of many difficulties to bring about his vision. And he had to overcome many of his own difficulties, like the fact that he completely fucking sucks as a writer, which anybody who watched the prequel can tell you based on that goddamn dialogue. There's an interesting assertion in the book made by one of the fans that if you watch the prequels with the sound turned off and just take them as a visual experience, they're much better. And you know, I'm thinking about, and reading this, I mean, this is why I rewatched Empire Strikes Back, is because this book motivated me to do it. As much as I hated them, reading this book has motivated me to watch the, fuck, to watch, can't fucking talk. watch the prequels again. Not because I think they're going to be any better, but just because I am a big fan of having knowledge of something before you insult it. I've seen them all one time and one time only, so I'm watching them again. And also, maybe I'm going to try this, watching with the volume off. See what happens. I mean, it can't hurt. The question is, while I'm watching them, what am I going to be eating? Like, because I'm a foodie. So, like I was on Netflix. Last night on Netflix. Like, I was Netflixing. And, like, I Netflixed all three prequels. And, like, I watched all three prequels. But sometimes I wish this was a video thing. If you guys could see me right now. Randy's cracking up because I'm doing my hair like I'm a ditzy feminist girl. Like, hi, I'm a feminist. So, like, I'm a foodie and I watch Netflix. So I watched all three prequels on Netflix and, like, I had the volume turned off and I ate, oh my god, I ate two tubs of ice cream because I'm such a foodie. I'm a foodie. Oh, the patriarchy. And I just don't understand why men don't think when the women say that they're not attracted to fat women, that's just the patriarchy. They've been socially conditioned to not like women with curves. I have curves. I watched 6.5 hours of Netflix and I ate ice cream the whole time. I have curves. I had to work to get this body. I'm a foodie. Okay. Anyhow, oh wait, this is something I need to research. That's not a bookmark I want to read. All right, here's a bookmark I want to read. If I can fucking get to the bookmark. All right, that's not, god damn it. Why am I so fucking retarded here? Don't answer that question. Oh, there's only one short thing, apparently. I just want to read this because there are many people that I know who are just, like, all in love with Natalie Portman because, like, Natalie Portman. One of my friends was, and I don't know this, I don't care. I could Google this, but I just don't give a shit. Somebody was telling me Natalie Portman has a PhD or something, and I'm like, who gives a fuck? How hard is it to get a fucking PhD in ethnic studies or underwater basket weaving or whatever she has a PhD in if she even has a. So anyway, this is just funny. Blah, 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 blah. Unfortunately, Portman was increasingly difficult to deal with on set. Some of the crew say she made several actresses playing her handmaidens, including Keira Knightley, who I think I'm supposed to know who that is, age 12 in The Phantom Menace, cry in the previous prequels, allegedly for the crime of talking to her without permission. According to some Lucasfilm insiders, many of her lines were cut from Revenge of the Sith for that reason. She had little left to do but be barefoot and pregnant with the Skywalker twins. Yes, Natalie Portman. Yes, getting angry at other women for talking to her without permission. How much you want to bet Natalie Portman identifies as a feminist? I don't know. All I know about Natalie Portman is that in whichever of the movies it was where she had the white cat suit, she looked fuckable. But I also know that was CGI. That's all I know about Natalie Portman. So I'm just saying, I would bet $5 that she identifies as a feminist. Because that sounds like something a feminist would do. How dare you speak to me? I'm better than you. I have a PhD in ethnic studies. I'm Natalie Portman. I'm better than you are. I'm going to make you cry because you spoke to me without permission. All right, anyway. Okay. Now, this is a long little stint, but just bear with me because I think it's interesting. This is the episode one that could have been. The first draft was markedly different from the final product. In the original Episode 1 script, Obi-Wan Kenobi had been sent alone by the Chancellor of the Galactic Republic to resolve the Trade Federation's blockade of the peaceful planet Utopia, or something. The Trade Federation, persuaded by the mysterious Darth Sidious, a cloaked figure who is able to force-choke Newt Gunray, By the way, one of the characters was named Newt Gunray. Newt Gingrich. Newt Gunray. Get it? Lucas is a very desperate liberal Democrat. In the book, they talk about how Lucas claims to be a 99%er before 99%ers existed. Yeah, I love when rich people who are so desperate for the acceptance of poor people that they try to act like they're poor. Yeah, George Lucas, real 99%er. And it talks about how much of what Lucas done is motivated by his dislike of Republicans. So yes, this is actually the character's name in episode one. It's one of the, you know, the racist race that was, but not the racist Jar Jar Binks, but the racist other race who was based on Japanese people. The leader of those, of that racist stereotypization of Japanese people is named, even though his name is never in the movie, his name is Newt Gunray. And in the book it said that Lucas came up with Newt Gunray off of Newt Gingrich. Whew. Like I said, man, just a shitty writer. It's like, okay, I get political satire, but there's a political satire requires some fucking talent. All right. A cloaked figure who is able to force choke Newt Gunray long distance via hologram attempts to assassinate Kenobi. The lone Jedi Knight escapes to the planet below and rescues a Gungan named Jar Jar Binks, who speaks in regular English sentences. With the help of the Gungan people, all of whom speak in regular English sentences, Kenobi travels through the ocean and the planet's core to the city of Naboo on the far side of the planet. There he rescues Queen Amidalia and escapes with her retinue in a silver spaceship. Amidalia reportedly resists the notion of traveling with a Gungan. She physically shuns Jar Jar for most of the movie. With some interesting tensions between Amidalia and Obi-Wan, our heroes land for repairs on the backward planet of Tatooine. I think I always pronounce it wrong when I call it Tatooine, but I just don't give a shit. Because again, I like Star Wars, I'm just not that much of a loser. Padme, supposedly the Queen's handmaiden, but in actual fact the Queen, is sent to join Obi-Wan and Jar Jar on a mission to look for parts. She deflects unwanted attention from local thugs with a little martial arts. A slave boy named Anakin saves Jar Jar's life and takes them back to his hovel, where he introduces his mother and a droid he's working on, 3PO, who is entirely mute. Which is good, because C-3PO is really fucking annoying. Watching Empire Strikes Back, again, I know I'm maybe in the minority here. Of course, I'm still the patriarchy. I still rule the world, but C-3PO and Chewbacca both just annoy the fuck out of me. Like, can we remake the movies without those two? Just throwing that out. This is just me, man. I get it. They annoy the fuck out of me. Anakin, in this draft, is full of ominous foresight. He claims to have seen Obi-Wan before in a dream, and Jesus-like forgiveness of his enemies, who tend to be, quote, in pain. He is wise beyond his years, as when he tells Padme, quote, we're helping each other. That's the natural way of things, unquote. When Padme asks Anakin if slavery is natural, Anakin responds, quote, of course not, but the stupidity of many creatures is, unquote. We also know, of course, that slavery is a direct result of the patriarchy, and if there were no white men, slavery would never exist, because only white men are capable of slavery. Fortunately, we had, well, today, the day I'm actually recording this, the 18th of January, 2016, MLK Day, you know, this is All White Men Are Racist Day, so we have this day every year to remind us that slavery is a function of white men, and without white men, slavery would never exist. He gives her a kiss on the cheek, and they watch the twin sons of Tatooine set. Before they leave the planet, Obi-Wan is attacked by a Sith Lord called Darth Maul. They have an exciting but inconclusive battle of Jedi powers while, quote, vibrating to the point of becoming almost invisible, unquote. A Sith spacecraft follows the Queen and the Jedi to Coruscant, the galactic capital, and a planet city, the name taken straight from the Timothy Zahn's trilogy, On Coruscant, Anakin is taken for a brief Jedi testing by Jedi Master Qui-Gon Jinn. Queen Amidalia is refused permission to talk about the invasion of her planet before the Senate, so she gathers her forces and attempts to retake Upitah herself, against Obi-Wan's advice. Padme and Jar Jar begin to develop common cause. Anakin helps out by evading the planet's blockade, bringing their ship out of hyperspace right above the surface, a miraculous feat that the ship's computers could not have achieved. He is apparently some kind of spatial savant. The Gungans come to the planet's aid after an impassioned speech by Jar Jar. Again, it's in proper English. Quote, "I have traveled far," muses Binks, as wise and solemn as Anakin. Quote, "I have seen many wonders. We must become part of the universe. In isolation, we will die." Unquote. He wishes Anakin well before they part for battle. Quote, "You are a wonder," says Binks, "and most amusing." Unquote. The Gungans attack the droids en masse. Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, who tagged along from Coruscant, liberate a planetary shield generator from a bunch of Trade Federation battle droids, taking the time to invoke Republic law and declare an illegal occupation. Declare an illegal occupation. When the droids are defeated, Darth Maul attacks and kills Qui-Gon. Despite the shocking death of his elder Jedi, Kenobi seems perfectly happy to banter with Maul on the topic of education. Lucas's passion ever since he started his educational foundation in 1991, before casually slaughtering him. Here's the script, as it was in the original script. Obi-Wan, your style of fighting is old, but I understand it now. Maul, you learn fast. Obi-Wan, you don't bother to learn. Maul, I don't have to. Obi-Wan slices the Sith in half. Obi-Wan, learn not, live not, my master always says. Now, see, later on he says that's not, I think that's a great piece of dialogue. Do you not want to see the movie that I'm reading? Is this not better than the shit that ended up on the screen for the actual episode one? Does this not sound like a good fucking movie? I would love this. I always want to say, yeah, man, dude, you don't learn. Well, I don't have to learn. Oh, yeah? Yeah, I just cut your fucking head off. Maybe you should have learned, asshole. I love it. I think it's a great scene. But what the fuck do I know? I'm not George Lucas. I don't name my characters Newt Gunray or whatever the fuck it was. Anakin and Padme together deliver the killer blow to the orbital craft. He acts as pilot and her as gunner. There's a funeral for Qui-Gon, for which Yoda flies in, and the old Jedi announces that Obi-Wan can train Anakin. There's a victory parade for which Senator Palpatine shows up and happens to mention he's Supreme Chancellor now. There it is. That is from the book, How Star Wars Conquered the Universe by Chris Taylor. That was the original treatment for episode one of Star Wars. I think we can all agree that sounds like a way better movie than what we got. And so according to this, George Lucas dumbed it down because he thought the original version was too dark. Well, let's think about this. And this is a problem with trying to make everybody happy. If you want to make a kid's movie and make, you know, let's be honest, the pod racing sequence was there to sell toys. If you want, and video games. I mean, you got to decide who your audience is, right? It's just like me with this podcast. When I hear, excuse me, hang on, I need a drink of tea. It's like with this podcast, when I have the idiots tell me that I would convince more people if I didn't use such bad language. I would convince more people if I wasn't so confrontational. I would convince more people if I didn't have pictures of cute volleyball girls on the blog post. You know, I'm not trying to convince anybody. That's not my fucking audience. Right. My audience is other cynical bastards like myself who believe in anarcho-capitalism and natural selection. Am I preaching to the choir? Probably so. And again, remember, as I've stated before, I do this podcast for my personal fucking amusement. That is the ultimate reason I am sitting here right now talking to this microphone. It's not to convince you. It's not to persuade people. It's not to disseminate information. It sure as fuck isn't to make money. I am doing this because I enjoy doing this. I am doing this, number one, for myself. And number two, for anybody who happens to enjoy listening to it, which I know is going to be a very small group of people, because you have to get through my bad language. You have to get through the evilness of me being a member of the patriarchy, being racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic. You know, you have to get through all of this stuff and be capable of taking from the podcast that which is useful to you, that which is entertaining to you. And when I do say something that's offensive to you, you have to be able to get over it and move on, because you have a fucking life and you're not a goddamn fucking fairy who needs a goddamn safe space. In Star Wars Episode 1, I'm pretty sure it was aimed at children. From what I see, it's got to have been aimed as children. I think a darker... The prequel trilogy is about, well, in theory, I mean, no, it is about, because if you look at the entire arc of the first six stories, it's the story of Darth Vader. It's Darth Vader, rise to fall. It's Darth Vader. It's Darth Vader's story. And when you're doing a story about the rise to power of the greatest, the most evil, the most famous, the most powerful, the most dominating Sith Lord in this universe, I think that should be a fucking dark thing. If you're making a movie for adults. If you're making a movie for children, then, you know, you throw in some fucking lame-ass dialogue and you have some pod racing so you can sell some goddamn toys. Unfortunately, George Lucas chose to make a movie for kids, not a movie for adults, which would have been much more interesting. All right, since we're doing Star Wars, where are we on time? Thank you. All right, let me do this. Let's do the Yoda quotes. Empire Strikes Back, in case you didn't listen to the previous episode of Stating the Obvious, which you should have. You should listen to all the episodes of Stating the Obvious, but, you know, whatever. I can't force you. I'm not a feminist. I'm not going to pass a law that says you have to listen to everything I say. I should. In the previous episode of Stating the Obvious, I talked about how I watched Empire Strikes Back again because I was motivated by reading this book. It got me interested in rewatching it. Because everybody's always like, oh, Empire Strikes Back was better than the original Star Wars. And I've always been of the opinion that, no, for me anyway, the original Star Wars was the best. Now, having watched Empire Strikes Back again for the first time in many, many years, I can understand why people liked it so much. It's a pretty fucking solid movie. The pacing is good. The Imperial walkers look, the special effects look more dated than I remembered them being. But it didn't bother me. That's the thing, is some of the special effects were pretty obviously fake, because they're fake, because these things don't really exist, you know, Imperial walkers and snowspeeders. But overall, you know, sometimes when you have bad special effects in a movie, it drives you crazy. And sometimes it doesn't. And so anyway, the point is, the movie was good. It held up for me. And I can see why people praise it. And the director did a good job. The director, again, you'll learn this if you read the book, How Star Wars Conquered the Universe. The director was a relative nobody who was selected because he was not a member of the Directors Guild, and Lucas was still in hot water with the Directors Guild because he, at the original Star Wars, Episode 4, what I call real Star Wars, you know, because he started it without the credits of who the director was and all that other shit, which, you know, I mean, nowadays that's, I think this happens all the time, but back then, you weren't allowed to do that by the Directors Guild. You had to have the credits at the beginning of the movie, and among the people credited, you had to credit the director. You couldn't just start a fucking movie without credits, because, my God, we can't let you. Yeah, I can choose what to do with my body, but you can't choose to do with your movie because regulation and unions. Well, I had to get something about the state in there. Come on. Anyways, Yoda. So anyhow, oh, Empire Strikes Back, this newbie director who is not a member of the Directors Guild because Lucas couldn't use anybody who was in the Directors Guild. And so he got this guy, and the guy did a good job. Yoda. As I said in the previous episode, when Yoda was on the screen, when they were on Dagobah, I actually had tears in my eyes. I was so emotionally moved by Yoda, and it was just so great, you know, when like when Luke first gets there and Yoda's like, oh look, I'm gonna eat your food or anything, and Luke's like, stop it, when are you gonna take me to Yoda? And he's like, oh, you need patience, and when are you gonna take me to Yoda, you little shit, you know? And then finally Yoda's like, I cannot train this kid, he has no patience, I can't do anything with him. And Obi-Wan Kenobi's spirit is like, you have to try, I was the same way, you know. And Luke's like, oh my God, you're Yoda. And this is like, and you know, it's like, dude. And this to me, this, there's so much. I saw so much in this scene of reality, because there's all these people out there who are like Luke Skywalker. They're young and they're stupid and they're impatient and they're entitled and they're spoiled and they're whiny. And you've got other people trying to explain to them shit like spending less money than you make and not being such a goddamn sensitive pussy. And not expecting the government to constantly be there to wipe your ass. And they're just like, but I wanted to go into town and buy some power converters. I want to see Yoda now. And Yoda's right there in front of you. You're just too dumb to know it. Because you don't have the patience. Because you think you know everything. And you know nothing. And as I'm watching it, Yoda's talking, and I started jotting down the anarcho-capitalist Yoda quotes. You must unlearn what you have learned. Yeah. To make the transition, and again, let me be clear, there's not really a transition because, again, this, I'm completely serious about this, there are two kinds of Homo sapiens. There are Homo sapien statist, Homo sapien anarchist. I truly think that in every sense of the way, we are different species. You are either a natural slave, as Aristotle talked about in the Politics, you're somebody who will never be able to provide for yourself and will always need someone else to tell you what to do, what not to do, what's right, what's wrong. Or you are capable of providing for yourself. You are capable of being independent within interdependence of a polis. Again, the book, Politics by Aristotle, a fascinating read. I've talked about it a lot in the past. You should be reading it. But for those who are anarcho-capitalists, those who can be independent within an interdependent polis, city, nation-state, whatever you want to call it. Aristotle calls it the polis, and I like that word. those who are Homo sapien anarchist have been conditioned to behave as statist. And in order to break free of your statist conditioning and to reach your full potential, you have to undergo masculine self-improvement, as is talked about in the Manosphere by people like Roosh and Aaron Clary. And Jack Donovan, who I'm going to talk about Jack Donovan in the near future when I get around to it. You don't know who Jack Donovan is, but we're going to discuss some of his stuff. He's an interesting individual with some very interesting thoughts. He wrote a very good book that I recommend you read. It's called The Way of Men, available on Amazon.com. Jack Donovan, The Way of Men. Anyhow, in order to move past your statist conditioning, you've got to unlearn everything that you have learned. Randy, time check. Thanks, babe. And of course, there's the one we all know. And these aren't in the order they appeared in the movie. I jotted them down randomly on the piece of paper. Do or do not, there is no try. And it's true. You're either going to do it or you're not going to do it. Just like, well, I'm trying. What the fuck does that look like? Right? It's like, I'm going to paint the kitchen. Well, you're either painting the kitchen or you're not painting the kitchen. What the fuck does trying to paint the kitchen look like? And of course, in an anarcho-capitalist society, there's no trying. You're either going to do shit or you're not going to do shit. Well, I'm trying. I tried to get a job. Oh, it's okay. Here's your welfare check. That trying to get a job, trying, isn't going to help in an anarcho-capitalist society. You're either going to fucking create value for other people and they're going to give you money, or you're not going to create value and you're going to fucking go extinct thanks to natural selection. A Jedi uses the Force for knowledge and defense, never attack. Knowledge and defense, but never attack. Wow, that sounds like a rephrasing of the non-aggression principle. Knowledge is good. Defense is good. But you don't attack. You do not initiate aggression against other people. But you do defend yourself. And of course, there's the part where Luke says, oh yeah, it's where Yoda pulls the X-Wing up out of the swamp, which is a badass scene. Again, it's amazing how much, the Yoda puppet, they did a great job making that puppet be a living character. Because in the book, they talk about how George Lucas was concerned that people were going to see Yoda and just see a puppet, right? It was going to be just this massive failure because no one was going to buy the illusion. And man, Frank Oz really, he fucking pulled the Yoda puppet off. You don't gotta do anything. You would be hard pressed to convince me that the Yoda puppet was not a fucking convincing character. And I completely believed that Yoda was a person. Anyhow, Yoda pulls the X-Wing up out of the swamp, and Luke says, I don't believe it. And Yoda says, that is why you fail. Again, the whole... when you say, I don't believe this, I don't believe that women can do anything to prevent themselves from being raped. I don't believe that women make more than 78 cents for every dollar a man makes. I don't believe that white men aren't racist, right? This is the problem with statism, is they don't fucking believe anything other than what they're fed by the state. And this is why they are all failures. Just like Skywalker was not willing to push himself hard enough to use the Force to lift the X-Wing. The statist is not willing to push themselves hard enough to fucking get through all the bullshit and accept that they can in fact have agency and control their own lives and improve themselves. And not everybody's going to be Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, but but you can be a better person without waiting for Obama to come by and wipe your ass for you. The statist is so comfortable where they are and so terrified of success. Just like Luke Skywalker, they cannot fucking get the X-Wing out of the swamp. Always with you, it cannot be done. That's what Yoda says to Luke. I can't do it. I can't. My name's Roosh, and I fucked hundreds of girls and traveled around the world and wrote books, but I need the government to decide what I should go to college for, because I can't do it. Yep. Even for all your talk about masculine self-improvement, always with you, it cannot be done. I think this was the first quote I wrote down from Yoda. Wars not make one great. Because Luke says, I'm looking for Yoda. He's a great warrior or something like that. Yoda says, wars not make one great. Again, just the truth there. It's war doesn't make you great. Being able to avoid war makes you great. Being able to negotiate makes you great. Being able to create value for other people makes you great. Being able to defend yourself makes you great. But war does not make you great. Yoda's talking to Kenobi's ghost about Luke, and he says, never his mind on where he was, what he was doing. This is the mindfulness thing. This is something that I got from Buddhism and meditation, and that I think also factors into the self-improvement and the sense of responsibility and the agency that are inherently necessary for anarcho-capitalism to work, is to be mindful, to have your mind on where you are and what you're doing, to be self-aware so that you can understand yourself, understand others, control your emotional responses. And then there's a sequence right before Luke goes into the evil bad place where Luke says, I am not afraid. And Yoda says, you will be. You will be. It's like, yeah. And there's a lot of people out there right now, they're not afraid because they have their welfare and their food stamps. But when the economy collapses, they will be afraid. They will be afraid. Because when there's no more food stamps, when there's no more Obama to wipe your ass, what are you going to do? You will be afraid.